I was thinking this week about an article that I read. I read it years ago. And so I got online and just did some Googling and did some searching because I wanted to find out about this story that I had read so long ago. And it was back in the news that week. The Chicago Tribune had had an article about that very story just the day before when I Googled it this week. I thought that was really interesting. So the story came out in 95. It's about something that happened in 1965, and it's still in the news today. Okay? It all started in 1965 when André François Raffray, however you say his name, he's from France, and he thought that he had made a pretty good deal. He agreed to pay an elderly woman, a client of his, $500 every month until she died, and then he would own her apartment. This was a very common practice in France at that time. You make monthly payments, kind of gambling on how long somebody's going to live. And one of you is going to get a good deal out of it, but they're going to be taken care of until they die. Well, when the agreement was signed, Raffray was 47 years old, and Jean Calment was 90. In 1965, it seemed like a pretty good deal. But in December of 1995, Raffray died at the age of 77, having forked over 30 years of payments for an apartment that he never got to live in. On the same day, Jean Calment, 120 years old, dined on duck and chocolate cake. According to the Guinness Book World Records, she was the oldest woman in the world at that time. Not only had Raffray paid more than twice the market value for the apartment, his wife and children had to continue paying her $500 a month for two more years until she died at the age of 122. Now, following Raffray's death, Mrs. Calment said, "In life, one sometimes makes bad deals." Apparently so. But the really sad part of the story to me, and what kind of ruined everything, is that she spent the last 12 years of her life, from 110 to 122, in a nursing home. Her apartment sat empty. She could have let them live in it and continue paying the money, but she was just too cold-hearted to do it. The place stayed empty until she died. He had paid twice the value, never got to enjoy it. You know, we live in a culture that is materialistic and that's greedy. And not everybody is that way. I mean, I get that, obviously. But the sad thing is that so many people put so much stock in the stuff that we have, and everybody's always trying to get more. I don't know if there's any culture in history that has put more value on stuff. I mean, we're some of the wealthiest people in the world, and yet everybody's looking for an angle. Everybody wants to make a deal that's going to benefit them. It's going to get them ahead. Money kind of represents comfort for many people. It represents security, pleasure, even power. And so this promise of a good life for many people becomes the focus of existence. And listen, I'm not saying at all that it's wrong to save for the future, buy nice things, or have a dream vacation. But John MacArthur pointed out that money is one of the best barometers of our spiritual condition. As Christians, we ought to be distinctive in how we manage our finances. That means how we make our money, how we spend our money, how we save it, how we give it away. Jesus said, "Beware of greed. A man's life does not consist of the abundance of his possessions." He said, "Freely you have received, so freely give." He said, "It's more blessed to give than to receive." And so we're beginning a three-week series today. It's on generosity. And truthfully, this is not a very appealing subject for some people. We like to talk about God's love. We like to talk about Jesus' grace. We like to talk about the promises in the Bible or how to have a better marriage, how to raise great kids. But when it comes to money, we get uncomfortable. Now, why is that? Well, I think for some of us, it's because we struggle with generosity. I mean, if you struggle with alcohol, you kind of hate to come and hear a sermon about addiction. If you're having a secret affair and the preacher talks about adultery, that can be pretty tough. You know, preachers get really sensitive if you talk about the vice of corny jokes, right? Because it just hits a little too close to home. Well, when it comes to money, some people cringe because the reality is we don't handle our finances very well. Maybe you've been coming here for a while, and if you have, you know that I don't talk about money all that often. And part of it is because there's this stereotype that preachers are always asking for money. I don't want you to think that I value you or I want you to be here just because of money. Truthfully, I have no idea how much anybody gives. You could be the biggest giver in our church. You could have not given anything. I don't know. I don't want to know. I think it's better that way. It's not about the money. But I read a book several years ago. It was called Take God at His Word. And what this author was pointing out is that there's all these promises in the Bible that God gives to people who are generous. I mean, just over and over again, all these promises are made. And so if we never talk about those things, if I never teach you about those things, I am robbing you of promises that God made. Proverbs 11:25 says, "A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed." Proverbs 19:17 says, "He who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for what he has done." I mean, you're actually lending to God when you're kind to the poor, and God repays often with interest. In the New Testament, 1 Timothy 6:19 is talking about people who are generous, and it says, "They will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of life that is truly life." And then God Himself made a promise in Malachi 3:10. He said, "Bring the whole tithe," a tithe is 10%, "bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house, says the Lord. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty. See if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you'll not have room enough for it." Man, a tithe, again, 10%. He says, God says, "Look, if you'll give me a tithe, I will bless you, and I will bless you, and I will bless you some more. I'm telling you, go ahead. I dare you," he says. "Test me and see if I won't keep my promise." And I'm telling you, Gail and I have just experienced this over the years. Through some very lean times, God taking care of us. Generosity is one of the keys to a full and abundant life. If God promises to bless the generous, and I don't talk to you about that, then I don't feel like I'm being fair to you. We're going to spend these 3 weeks working our way down through two chapters in the Bible. It's in 2 Corinthians in the New Testament, chapters 8 and 9. This is a letter that Paul wrote to the church in Corinth. And my prayer is that this series will kind of fan the flames of generosity in our church and then have repercussions throughout this community. I mean, no kidding. If we could begin to understand that God owns everything, that He loans us what we have, that He asks us to be wise in how we spend it, to give freely. And when we do that, that He's going to just pour more blessings on us. If we can get our brains around that, I'm telling you, the implications are huge. And so as we look down through chapter 8 of 2 Corinthians, just the first 15 verses, I'm going to show you six things that are promises made to those who are generous. And showing us that generosity is a great way to live. And if we pay attention, I'm telling you, this stuff will change your life. And let me give you some background of what's happening here before we get into the chapter itself. In this section of Paul's letter, he's writing again to these Christians who live in this town of Corinth, or city. It's a prominent city in Greece. You can see it there on the Mediterranean. At times, Paul visited Corinth. At other times, he wrote letters to them. This is the second letter that we have in existence today. And Paul's talking about this collection that's being taken up for the Christians who live across in Jerusalem, there across the Mediterranean Sea. See, the New Testament church was born in Jerusalem. That's where everything got started. The mother church was there, the mother ship, if you will. Okay, that's where it all began, was in Jerusalem. And yet the believers there were facing these intense challenges. There was poverty because of Roman persecution. There was poverty because of extreme taxation. There was poverty just because of this famine that was going on in the area. So Paul kind of took it upon himself as he traveled around the Mediterranean and started churches among the Gentiles. They were taking up money and sending it back to the brothers and sisters in Jerusalem because they were going through such a hard time. And so he's writing in this section of his letter to the Corinthians about the special offering that's being taken up for the Christians in Jerusalem. And so over these verses, he helps us understand why generosity is so pivotal to the very definition of what it means to be a Christian. That generosity should be part of our DNA. I want to read the first four verses just to kind of set things up. Then we'll start working down through here and I'll give you some of these principles. 2 Corinthians chapter 8 begins this way. "And now, brothers," presumably brothers and sisters, okay, "we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. Entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints." So here's what's happening. Paul's writing to the Corinthians. He's telling them about the Macedonian Christians who are raising money for the Jerusalem Christians. Okay, so we've got three different areas going on here. So he's telling the Corinthians about the Macedonians. And right off the bat, we see that generosity invites God's grace. Paul starts this chapter by telling us about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. And then he goes on to talk about how amazing their generosity is. So it's God's grace and their generosity go hand in hand in a profound way. So here's what I wondered as I was studying this passage. I wrote the question out so you'd get it, okay? Were they generous because of God's grace? Or did God show them more grace because of their generosity? Does that make sense? Because it says that I want to tell you about the grace that God's giving the Macedonian churches. What I think he's saying here is that they received extra grace because of their generosity. Now, we're not talking here about salvation. We're not talking about saving grace. Paul's not saying that they earned heaven because they gave money. There was this rich guy I heard about. He had never been interested in God, never been interested in the church. But on his deathbed, he calls a minister to him. He said, look, preacher, I've never been a religious man, never had time for all that stuff. But if I give all of my fortune to the church when I die, will I go to heaven? And the preacher said, well, I don't know, but it's worth a try. You know, this is not about buying grace, okay? By its very definition, grace is unmerited favor. It's a blessing that's unearned. It's undeserved. It's receiving more than you have coming to you. You can't buy it. But what I think Paul is saying here is that because these Macedonian believers were so generous, that God was showing them more favor than would have been expected. He poured out more blessing on them because of what they were doing for other people. Let me tell you about the grace that God is showing them. Think about it like this. Good parents love their kids no matter what, right? I mean, maybe as a parent or grandparent, you have one of those bumper stickers that says, my kid is an honor roll student. Maybe you have one of those bumper stickers that says, my kid beat up your honor roll student. Okay, I mean, I don't know what kind of kid you have, but you love them no matter what, right? I mean, right? Whether they're the good kid or the bad kid, you love them no matter what. But here's the deal. When your son or daughter is really behaving well, man, when they're just being helpful around the house and they're just going above and beyond and you're so proud of them, aren't you, you're not going to love them anymore, but aren't you inclined to show them more favor? To maybe boost, you know, allowance or to do some things that give them some more, you know, freedoms or more benefits of some kind, cut them some slack? A generous spirit on our part invites the favor of God. And frankly, some of you could use some help, okay? So if you're more generous, God's going to bless you because of that. God showed the Macedonians extra grace despite their poverty because of their own generosity. Now, we also see that generosity was an expression of joy for them. Verses 2 and 3, again, out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up into rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. Okay, they did not give because of their trials. They did not give certainly because of their poverty. Those things could have been barriers or excuses not to give at all. But instead, because of their joy, they crashed through the barriers and they gave generously. In spite of the poverty, in spite of the trials, because of the joy, they were generous. You know, it's like the kid who sat on Santa's lap at the mall and he asked for 2 fire trucks, 2 remote control cars, 2 baseball gloves, 2 kickballs. And Santa was like, wow, that's a lot. Why do you need 2 of everything? And he said, so I can share. Well, you know, it's easy to share if you have 2 of everything, right? What makes sharing tough is when you don't have 2 of everything. It's tougher when you don't have much of anything at all, and that's what's so profound about the Macedonians. They were generous with what little they had because they were grateful for the little that they had. And because of Christ in their lives, their need could not steal their joy. Listen to this again. Their overflowing joy, their extreme poverty, welled up into rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. You know, the video kind of alluded to this earlier. Have you ever said, or maybe you didn't say it out loud, but you thought it in your heart, I can't afford to be generous now, but when I have more, then I'll be generous. I got to be honest with you. If you don't have a generous spirit with little, you would not be generous if you had millions. I just don't believe you would. Because generosity and a joyful, you know, giving spirit doesn't come when you have extra. It just comes because of who you are. It's a way of life, and God honors that. In fact, here's another blessing, benefit, that we have from generosity. It shows that we belong to Christ. Paul goes on talking about the Macedonians, these other believers who were so generous, incredibly generous. In the middle of verse 3, he says, entirely on their own, remember he talked about their trials and their poverty, entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints. And they did not do as we expected. They gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us in keeping with God's will. They gave themselves first to the Lord and then they begged us to be able to be in on the giving. See, I think generosity reveals our relationship with Jesus. When our hearts belong to Christ, we're not as likely to cling to all the stuff of this world. It's easier to turn loose of things when your heart's in the right place. I mean, I've said before that a stingy Christian is a contradiction in terms. There are lots of non-Christians who are generous. We're not the only ones who are generous. I get that. But I'm telling you, a stingy Christian is a contradiction. Selfishness is the exact opposite of the heart of Jesus. And I think the reason the Macedonians were so quick to share with their brothers and sisters in need, the believers in Jerusalem, these people they had never met, probably would never meet in this life, the reason they were so generous with them was because they had fully surrendered their lives to Jesus. And that means they had surrendered everything to Him. When we begin to understand the treasure that Christ is in our lives, all the other stuff kind of pales in comparison. You know, I was reading and studying this passage this week, and there's just so much in there. I was trying to think, I know we have a list of six things, but how can we boil it down to one bottom line? What's one take home that we can all take away? And here's what I came up with. Bottom line, the tighter you hold on to Jesus, the easier it is to let go of everything else. Let's talk about your spiritual condition. Where you are with the Lord. The tighter you hold on to Jesus, the easier it is to let go of everything else. They gave themselves first to the Lord. Now Paul continues in verses 6 and 7 of chapter 8. He says, so we urged Titus, since he had earlier made a beginning. In other words, he's been a part of this offering that you guys are collecting. We urged him to bring to completion this act of grace on your part. But just as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, in your love for us, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. See, generosity makes us more like God. Paul says, look, you started the offering with Titus a while back. It's time to finish what you started. But notice what he says. He calls giving an act of grace. He says, I want you to excel in the grace of giving. Grace is undeserved favor, we said. Grace starts with God. So when we show grace, we're being like who? We're being like God. It starts with Him. It shines through us. Not only are we recipients of God's grace, but we have this opportunity to demonstrate grace in a tangible way. Generosity makes us more like our Father in heaven. I mean, it might be something simple like sharing a meal with a neighbor. It might be loaning something to somebody who wants to borrow a tool or something that you have at your house, and you know the temptation is to kind of hang on to your stuff, but maybe generosity just gives you a spirit of saying, sure, you can borrow that. Generosity is tipping well. I'm telling you, we need to be the best tippers, not cheap. It ought to be, it might be things like Christmas donations or, you know, donating to things to people who are in need. But listen, on top of those kinds of things, God calls us to be generous through the work of the church. He just does. When you give money here, man, you're providing for the staff, and we're certainly very, very grateful. But you're taking care of this facility. You're supporting local ministries. You're supporting work that's being done around the world. I mean, it's kind of hard to get your brains around this, but when you put money in the offering plate, There will be people literally in heaven someday because of what you did. It's unbelievable. But you are mobilizing work that's being done around the world. Generosity is an act of grace. It's an expression of God's love and God's blessing. Jesus said, look, when you serve others, it's like you're serving me. He said, you give a cup of cold water in my name, that's an outward expression of grace. It's like we're being the hands and the feet of Jesus. I remember reading a book by Chuck Swindoll years ago, and he told about Europe following the consequences of World War II, how devastated everything was, these cities that had just been wrecked. And he said, you know, there were the graves, there were all these destroyed buildings, it was just hard to see, but man, nothing was sadder than seeing children in the streets who were hungry. There was everywhere. And one day this soldier was walking through the streets of London, an area that had been really decimated in many ways, but there was a bakery there. There was a little boy who was standing outside the bakery, had his little nose pressed up against the glass. They were taking donuts out of the oven inside. And the soldier said, would you like a donut? Oh, he said, yes, sir, I sure would. The soldier goes in, buys a donut, brings it back, hands it to him. He turns to go, and the little boy says, mister, are you God? And Swindoll wrote, we are never more like God than when we give. We are never more like God than when we give. In fact, he goes on to say in this text, the generosity proves our love. Look at verses 8 and 9. He says, look, I'm not commanding you to be generous, but I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others. In other words, I've been talking about the Macedonians over here. I want to compare you to them. But then he goes on to kind of raise the bar. He says, look, you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. Though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that you, through his poverty, might become rich. Jesus had everything. Jesus gave up everything so that you and I could receive everything. He proved his love by what he sacrificed. And generosity proves our love. You know, back in the 1990s, I preached at a church up in Indiana, and it was a pretty good-sized church, and I'll be honest with you, we had some pretty wealthy people in the church. Everybody there wasn't. We had a mix of people, but we had doctors and lawyers, and we had bankers and engineers who were there, and we were growing, and we needed a new building, so we were having a capital campaign, and we asked people to give sacrificially so that we could do a better job of reaching out into the community. Our building was a tool for service. We wanted it to be the best it could be, not extravagant, but we wanted it functional. And so we were having people in the church get up and give testimonies of how they were kind of sacrificing, how they were giving for the work to be done, to invest in our community. And I'll never forget Velma Daup. Velma was the sweetest little lady you ever saw. I had preached her husband's funeral a couple of years before. She had snow white hair. She wore a back brace. Her little fingers were just gnarled up with arthritis. But man, she always had a smile on her face. Sweetest lady. And we were raising money for a missionary, so she baked pies and sold the pies to make money for the missionaries. I mean, she just had such a beautiful heart. And I remember on this Sunday, she was going to get up and she was going to share her testimony. I had to help her up the steps, all 5 foot nothing to her. And she got on that stage and she stood 10 feet tall, I'm telling you. She just talked to the church about how, man, it was hard since Bill had died. She missed him so much. And she lived on a fixed income. Things were tight for her, but God had been so good to her. And she was so excited to be able to give something back and to help build the church bigger for more people and all these wealthy people out in the audience. And she shared what she was doing to help us build the church. She had canceled a magazine subscription so she'd have some extra money, and she turned her thermostat down in the winter. She said, I can just always get another quilt. So she could save a little money to build the church. And man, it was humbling. Because she shared, and you realize this is not a woman who's giving out of her abundance. This is a woman who's giving out of love. I'm telling you, God can do crazy things with that. It's powerful. Maybe you've heard it said, you can give without loving, but you can't love without giving. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. The tighter you hold on to Jesus, the easier it is to let go of everything else. Now, Paul goes on in our text to encourage the Corinthians to keep their promise. He tells them to finish the job. They committed to raising more money. They'd already had an offering for the Jerusalem believers. But he said, look, you made a promise. You pledged some money. Let's finish the work. He wants them to keep their word. And you know something? Some churches ask you to make a pledge every year of how much you're going to give that year. We don't do that here. If we ever do a capital campaign to build, we might have to do that. But we don't ask for a pledge. But I'm going to challenge you in your own heart, mind, with your spouse, sit down and just talk about it. Because what I have found is if you're just kind of haphazard and flippant about generosity, it's really not usually very much. But if you'll just think about it and pray about it and ask God to give you wisdom, I believe God will bless you in that. My two favorite cartoons about giving show the contrast about giving. One shows this minister, he's shaking hands after church, and there's this really grouchy-looking guy standing there, and the minister just has a big smile on his face, and he says, hey, John, I found those offering envelopes you told me you lost. They were buried in a hole in a ravine about 5 miles outside of town. I found them for you. You know, the guy was real excited. But the other one that I like even better is these two guys are standing out in front of church. They're in their boxer shorts. They have Bibles in their hands. And one of them says to the other, man, that was the best sermon on giving I've ever heard. I mean, those guys gave it all, you know. Man, we need to excel, Paul says, in the grace of giving. And then he gives us one more reason why generosity is the best way to live. He says in verses 13 and following, our desire is not that others might be relieved while you're hard-pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn, their plenty will supply what you need. Then there will be equality. As it is written, he who gathered much did not have too much, he who gathered little did not have too little. See, I believe that generosity builds community. It makes us a family. When the Bible doesn't teach that you should give so much to the church that you end up in the poorhouse, okay, it's not wise to sacrifice so much for others that you don't take care of your own family. I would say be really cautious co-signing for somebody's loan, especially for something really big like a house, something that could be so overwhelming that it could do you in financially. You have to be really careful about those kind of things. But the goal here, Paul says, is look, those who have should share with those who have not. That's what makes us a family. Paul's talk of equality here is not about socialism. It's not this idea that you just force everybody down to the lowest common denominator and everybody's just like everybody else kind of at the bottom. That's not what he's talking about at all. He's saying that everybody should have their needs met equally. If a person is genuinely trying to take care of himself and yet he's forced to ask for assistance, then we ought to be willing to help. And beyond that, once basic needs are met, the reality is some people are going to have more excess than others. And that's okay. As long as we're generous, some people are always going to be a little smarter, a little sharper, a little better at investing, maybe a little, you know, higher paid in their work. All that's okay as long as we're generous and willing to share. Paul says not that everybody has to be equal, but that everybody should have their needs met equally. And there's a dual implication here. One is that you need to be a gracious giver, right? What did Paul say to the Corinthians? At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, the believers in Jerusalem. See, Paul's saying, look, rich and poor alike, everybody can be generous. But there will be times that you have an abundance and you are uniquely positioned to help people who are going through tough times. You know, the Bible talks about tithing, about giving 10%, but I read about a guy, I think it was Rick Warren, I'm not 100% sure that's right, but this guy lived on 10% and gave 90% away. I mean, some people have that ability, and they still live a comfortable life. Rich Mullins was just a Christian musician that I loved. He was killed in a car crash about 20 years ago. He could have been worth millions, but he lived on part of the royalties from one song, and he gave everything else away. And he died with few possessions because of the decision he made. God had uniquely positioned him, and there were gaps and needs, and he filled them in. It was what he was called to do. So we need to be gracious givers, but the other side of the coin is that we also need to be gracious receivers. You know what? I've known people who were too proud to ask for help, and they suffered for it. Their family, their kids suffered for it. Instead of being ashamed, instead of acting like we're all well and good when we're not, we need to be willing to accept some help. knowing that once we're back on our feet, then we can be the ones who help other people. It's a give and take kind of relationship. Listen again to verse 14. At the present time, Paul says, you Corinthians, your plenty will supply what the believers in Jerusalem need, so that in turn, when you have a need later, they will be able to supply your need. That's what brings equality. It's a give and take kind of a thing. So Paul says, look, generosity, man, there's all kinds of benefits. It invites God's grace, His favor. It offers an expression of joy. It shows that we belong to Christ. It makes us more like God. It proves our love and it builds community. The tighter you hold on to Jesus, the easier it is to let go of everything else. Tony Campolo is a preacher that I've got to hear a couple of times, and he was a really popular guest speaker for a while in years past. And he spoke to a women's group one time, and before he spoke, there was a missionary who was invited to get up and share, and she talked about this orphanage in Asia. There was a crisis that was kind of going on. They desperately needed $4,000 right away. And after she finished, the president of this ladies group got up and said, oh, that was a touching story. I'm going to ask our guest speaker, Dr. Campolo, to come up. And before he shares his remarks with us, I'd like for him to pray about this need, that God would supply this need. And so she said, Dr. Campolo, would you please come up to the platform? So he came up and he said, no. And she said, excuse me. He said, no, I won't pray. And she said, what do you mean? And he said, I'm not going to pray that God supplies this need because I think He already has. Look around this room. Here's 400 people, well-dressed. Everybody looks pretty blessed here. I'd like to propose that right now we all empty the cash out of our wallets and our purses onto the tables, and we'll take up an offering and we'll see if God hasn't already met this need. And the president kind of said, oh, Dr. Campolo, thank you. That's a good lesson for us all. I think we've all learned a good lesson here, ladies, haven't we? He said, I'm not trying to teach you a lesson or make a point. I'm trying to meet a need. And there's a need here. I will empty my wallet. I will challenge anybody else in the room to do that who would like to do so. And let's see what God can do through us. And so they did, and they did not collect $4,000. They collected $5,000. And Campolo said, look, we did not need to pray that God would supply the need. He already supplied the need. We needed to turn loose of it. I'm just telling you, the tighter you hold on to Christ, the easier it is to let go of everything else. Let's pray. God, You have blessed us richly. You have. You know, some of us here are pretty wealthy, others maybe going through pretty tough times, but the reality is we had a place to sleep last night, we're wearing clothes, we had something to eat. We're blessed. We are. And You've asked us, You've called us to be generous people, to share our hearts, our lives, sure, our money, but more than that, ourselves with other people. And so, God, I pray that we would have a generous spirit, that we would be a generous church. I pray, God, that we'd have this opportunity to share Your love. And I pray that we would do it with the right heart. Because, God, the reality is You've promised to bless those who are generous. We don't show generosity selfishly just so we'll get rich. But we just recognize that as we give, You just pour back into us, and we're so grateful. So, God, may we live the best lives by having the right kind of heart. And I pray this in Christ's name. Amen.